And I think that it is such a powerful thing to just take your jujitsu and put it out in the world, even if it's not that good yet, to just take it out there and be like, this is how I'm practicing. This is what I'm working on. And to watch your own progression. There's stuff that we used to teach that I'm like, what did we do there? Why was that working? And it's not working for me now. And I don't even know that had we been filming at that point in time, I would know. So I really encourage everybody to get in and start recording your stuff and put it out in the world. You'll be amazed what comes back to you, who comes back to you, how you can grow. If I see something that I like that you're on there, I'm following you now. I'm excited to learn from you. And that's from the King Nibar account.
Welcome to Forever White Belt. I'm your host, Adolfo Fronda. In today's episode, we have a special guest, Katie Casimir, from the famed King Nibar duo, Bendy and Katie. At the heart of our conversation lies the story of Bendy Casimir, a Paris native who found his way to the United States through the world of MMA, eventually becoming enamored with jiu-jitsu and the intricacies of knee bars. His journey intertwined with that of his wife, Katie, a former kickboxer, MMA fighter turned grappler. This led to the creation of the renowned King Nibar system. What sets Bendy and Katie apart is their relentless pursuit of knowledge within jiu-jitsu. Their King Nibar course isn't just for experts, it's for anyone who's passionate about the sport and eager to embrace the journey of continuous learning. As they put it, there is no destination in jiu-jitsu. Throughout our discussion, we'll uncover the essence of their teachings, the philosophy of their approach, and the collaborative spirit that drives their passion. From their experiences training with legends like Robert Drysdale, to the invaluable lessons learned from their own students, Bendy and Katie embody the spirit of lifelong students. Join us as we explore the intricacies of the King Nibar system, from the basics to the advanced techniques, and discover how this dynamic duo is shaping the landscape of jiu-jitsu education. So, whether you're a seasoned practitioner or just beginning your journey, prepare to be inspired, challenged, and ultimately transformed by the wisdom of Bendy and Katie Casimir. And remember, in the world of jiu-jitsu, we're all forever white belts, endlessly striving for improvement, growth, and mastery. And with that, I give you Katie Casimir. Katie, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, knee bars. This show, everyone, is going to be a lot of knee bar talk here. But first of all, I want to give you a little context in terms of like how I found out about yourself and Bendy and people you heard in the introduction, you know, a little bit about these two. And it was actually a couple that was visiting here in Northern California and who I've seen at Globetrotters, Charles, Harriet, and Natasha. And they had nothing but like wonderful things to say about the both of you, just the kindest things. And embarrassing for myself, I had no idea who you two were. And I heard this Bendy and Katie. I'm like, what is this? You know, it's such a unique name, Bendy. And then they were mentioning something about knee bars. And then I heard Brandon McCaffrey talk about Bendy as well. And the knee bar being the knee bar god of all the stuff that you guys were doing in Las Vegas.
Wow. I didn't know he had said that. Wow. That's awesome. I mean, I think the world of Brandon too. And of course, Charles and Natasha, they're dear friends. I talk about them all the time too. And I have as many nice things to say about them.
You guys obviously know a ton of stuff, but you're known primarily for the knee bar, right? Thus the name King Knee Bar, and I would argue Queen Knee Bar as well. But let's talk about just the traditional knee bar itself. For me, my thoughts on the traditional knee bar, the pros of it are that it's, and I'm being very high level about this, is that it's quick and easy to put on. The cons that I've noticed of it for myself, being no expert in knee bar, is not the best control, and sometimes it's easier to counter than other ways. Can you describe the traditional knee bar and your thoughts on it?
Okay, so my thoughts on the traditional knee bar, and we come back to this a lot, is that it's very misunderstood. And I could go off on this for hours, but a lot of times the things that we learn in jiu-jitsu we're mimicking, we haven't actually learned them. So you think about like, have you ever been single-legged by a Division I wrestler and then been single-legged by a jiu-jitsu black belt? It's not the same thing, right? They're doing what they think they see the Division I wrestler doing, but there's so much nuance to what the Division I wrestler is doing that the black belt just doesn't replicate that. And it doesn't mean they have a bad single leg. It's just not the same thing. So I think that that's a big thing to start out with when you're talking about their traditional knee bar. The second thing is probably the evolution of our knee bar. We were doing a traditional knee bar for a long time. And it was working because people, like you said, it's fast. People don't know what's going on.
Can you just describe what the knee bar is for like the day one white belts out there?
Functionally, it is a hyperextension of the leg. So if you think about an arm bar, it is exactly the same thing. You're just doing it to the leg. To where, like, when you're doing an arm bar, I think that's a lot easier for a day one white belt to understand, is that you have controlled the shoulder line and you have controlled the end of my lever. And now you're putting pressure right in the fulcrum on my joint. And it's exactly the same thing with the knee bar. I'm controlling the hips. I have your foot right underneath my head, so I am controlling the end of the lever, and I'm trying to put pressure right, actually with the knee bar, I kind of want to be right just above the knee, because if it's right on the knee, it's too easy for it to slip out, especially with the traditional knee bar. But still, I'm putting pressure right on the joint with my hips. So if you understand an arm bar, you understand a knee bar. Yes, if you are just grabbing the end of the lever and trying to hyperextend the leg, you are going to probably lose control of the situation if somebody has any idea at all how to defend a knee bar. So the important thing that I think that most people miss, regardless of whether or not you put our Vinnie lock on or if you're doing a traditional knee bar, is you have to control the other leg. Now, when you're doing a heel hook, you're in a very different position with your legs, where your legs are controlling the other leg. Your legs are controlling the hip line. If I am only squeezing my thighs together on your femur and controlling your foot with my head, even if I'm controlling it really well, I do not have control of that other leg, which means I do not have control of your hips. And so when I'm even doing a traditional knee bar, I will have some sort of grip or pressure that I'm putting on your opposite leg that is causing that to stop. And then when I go to finish the knee bar, I am letting go with that other hand or with whatever grip I have there only for that millisecond that requires me to get my break. I'll be holding it with one hand and I'll be controlling your other leg with my other hand. And sometimes I can finish it with one hand and sometimes I have to let go. But the time that I can let go of your leg and put my hand on your heel and extend my hips is not enough time for you to do anything defensively there.
First of all, one of the things I want to know is why is it named the Vinnie Lock? And then another one will be my feedback in terms of the pros is a ton of control. And I don't know if it's a con, but there does seem to be an additional step. Very worth it. Some other questions in terms of like the knee line is what I know is when I've been experimenting. Last month was your guys' knee bar month for myself. And the importance of the knee line, keeping the knee line or not. And when it gets messy, can it turn into like a lateral knee break if things go sideways? So just your thoughts on this thing called the Vinnie Lock. Can you describe what it is, why it's named what it is?
Everybody loves Bendy. I'm Bendy's wife to like 90% of the jiu-jitsu community here in Vegas. Most of them don't even know my name. He's just so wonderful. But anyway, he was going and training over with the guys at Syndicate. They wanted him over there. He's a great training partner. And he came home one day and he was like, "You are not going to believe what I learned today." And Vinny Magalesh had taught it to him. And apparently Vinny calls it a leg lace. Maybe he learned it from Keenan. I don't know where it came from. Honestly, if you look at old Eric Paulson videos, he was doing something pretty similar, if not the same thing. But we learned it from Vinny and we're really big on citing our sources. So thus we have the Drysdale position. Anytime you hear me talking about a technique, you know, I will be like, I learned this. This is a concept I got from Charles Harriet. This is a thing I got from a Craig Jones video. I love citing sources. I think it's so important to give people an opportunity to be like, hey, I want to know more about this. Let me go to the source and find it. So we started calling it the Vinnie Lock, and then we realized that there was two pieces to it, the Vinnie Lock and the Vinnie Control. So that's kind of been our differentiation from it. And obviously we've kind of taken it and made it our own. I've seen other people call it the King Knee Bar. So what it is, I am taking the leg that I'm not attacking and I'm dragging it up behind the leg that I am attacking. And I'm putting my knee pit on your ankle pit. And then I'm straightening the leg and controlling it. So that's where the hyperextension comes from. In that, all of the little pieces of control I have to have to do the traditional knee bar, the heels in the butt, the squeezing of my legs together, the perfect position of my hip line to your knee line. The foot control is still important, but you know, all of these things that are like a lot of working parts, just all of a sudden disappear. And it doesn't matter how hard you curl your hamstring. I can take your heel and I can push your knee into my belly with it. And all of a sudden now your hamstring is fighting my whole body. It's not fighting my bicep anymore. Like if you were to do that with a traditional knee bar, now it's my two biceps against your hamstrings. I'm not going to win that fight. But when it's my whole body, I can definitely win that fight. Then when I get the foot up to my head, I want to pinch it with my head. Because if you can start to rotate your knee, you can still kind of create problems there. And yes, there's a side knee bar that you can kind of get into it, and that's pretty gross. That can be really nasty, but not always, because sometimes the structure of your knee is kind of meant to hold up. And so it kind of puts it in a position where your knee is a little bit stronger there, and you can pass it over for a heel hook sometimes too. So it's not like the foot control is the end all be all, but like if I can prevent a scramble, I'm always going to prevent a scramble. I'm going to finish the submission over letting you roll around for a while. And I actually did get out of one of Vinny's Vinny locks one time by rotating my knee around. It took me 3 minutes. I was literally watching the clock. It took me 3 minutes to get out of that position, but I did end up getting out. So there is some weakness to it, but it's so powerful. But yes, going back to what you were saying about the extra steps, and especially with our students, I sit in the, I get to my position, I'm in the Drysdale. They're like, I'm not giving you this other leg. But that's where I will start to roll back to my traditional knee bars. And so it definitely has its place. When you don't want to let me have that other leg, that means that you've let your leg I'm attacking free. If you're kicking the other leg away so that I can't get my Vinny lock on it, if you're kicking your legs forward so I can't get my Vinny lock, there's a forward knee bar that we do from there. So there's a lot to it. But yeah, trying to stabilize an attack out of our control positions has gotten way more challenging, especially as our students and training partners have started to understand and recognize. Then they know what they need to do to stop it. We've definitely become more positional people the deeper we've gotten into this, because the submissions, your students know you well. And if you're going to lose your position diving on a knee bar, which I think happens a lot, and I think that's where knee bars get a bad name too, is people are like, oh, there's a straight leg, let me jump down to the end, but they haven't controlled the hips and people just slide right on out.
You mentioned something called the Drysdale. So let's talk about your setups. And this one seems to be sort of a kind of a staple in the system. Can you talk about that?
All right, so it comes from this toe hold that Drysdale teaches, actually. And this works really well if the legs are both triangled. I do have a video on our YouTube channel called Why We Call It the Drysdale. So what I'm doing is I'm sitting on you kind of backwards. I want to be sitting high up on your ribs. It stops a lot of problems. But I'm only on like half of my butt. I've got one sit bone on your ribs. So that really, really is uncomfortable just in its own right. Now, if you have your legs triangled or connected in some way, what I'm going to do is I'm going to weave underneath your top leg and I'm going to attach to your bottom leg. And then I'm going to do what David Avalon kind of calls the motorcycle grip. I'm just turning that forward, just like they do with the Kimura grip. I'm turning that forward and that puts a lot of pressure on your legs. They're facing one direction and I'm sitting on your upper body so it can't go with them. And that is the Drysdale position that we work out. I want my arm, think wide base instead of tight connection here. I need my base out. So my arm is stretched out, my back leg is stretched out. And this is a position that I can ride on a lot of people, even that are significantly bigger than me and even that know this position well for a long time. Whether or not I can start to isolate legs at that point, that's a different thing. But that's the Drysdale position. Now from there, when you've got the knees on both sides, now you have exposure to that toe and I have control of your upper body. So I can start attacking my toe hold there and bringing it back. And so when we were doing this, we used to just sit almost like a Russian cowboy, but only with one leg in between. So facing straight back, sitting like you're sitting in a chair with both feet flat on the floor. But when we started playing with this, we realized how much more mobility we have, how much easier it is to pass from there if I can't get your legs, how much easier. Just my full position is so much more stable at that point. And I'm very mobile too. If I want to just stand up and walk away and not and be done with this, I am perfectly free to do that. Now, as a striker in MMA, I love positions like that where I can be like, okay, you're giving me too much trouble here. Get back up. I can punch you from here. But it's also a really great position for ground and pound in MMA. We did a whole series on that too, where we show the way that you can really attack and distract. And your primary attack can become your secondary attack and back and forth with all of that, because you can really use it for ground and pound well, because you're so high to the head, but you have control of the legs. That's also a really great factor to this position.
Now, one of the things I've noticed is when you're teaching the flow, so to speak, from the Drysdale to the Vinny Lock and to the finish, is at the end, when you're at the bottom, you always emphasize coming back on top. Can you explain why you do this every single time?
Well, both Bendy and I have lost because we didn't finish a knee bar. I got TKO'd. He just lost, you know, he just got silver in the tournament. But understanding that, especially in no-gi, now if you're doing this in gi, man, it's good. If you get that Vinny Lock in, it's game over. But if you're doing this in no-gi, there are just a lot of things that can happen in between. And I don't want you on top of me with my head wrapped, raining down punches on me. Now my legs are all tangled up in yours and you have a top position. It's a really bad place to be. And I guess I should say that everything that we do is designed to work in gi, no gi, and in MMA. And I think that that changes a lot of our perceptions of things, that everything we're doing, we're like, okay, but is this going to work if somebody can hit me? Okay, what is the problem here if somebody's grabbing my sleeve or my lapel? And no, we're not gi people, but we are aware that those are things. And Bendy's competed in the gi quite a bit and had plenty of success there with our system because you're prepared for that. But a lot of times you look at sport jiu-jitsu, the transitions over into MMA, and all of a sudden it doesn't translate. They start to look a lot like what we do, only not as good because they haven't put the time on it. Even so, like sometimes in knee bars, I will be so sure that I can finish a single leg knee bar that I'm just literally jumping on it. I don't teach this, but I'll do it. I need to be able to get back on top with the quickness. If I recognize that this is not working, the longer I sit there pulling on a knee bar that's not working, the longer I'm giving you, you will find your way out. You will get back on top of me. So if I can immediately get up, reset, look for my pass, look for a Kimura, look for something else quickly based on your reaction, then I am way ahead in this game. And again, I feel like that's why knee bars get such a bad rap, is because people like trying and not realizing that they've lost it, not able to get back on top. And then next thing you know, they'll be gift wrapping you on the top with your, you know, and you're just like stuck there because you didn't take that moment that you had still to keep your top position. And again, as an MMA fighter, top position is everything.
You guys have systematized this whole thing, which is amazing. I saw Bendy use an analogy of, he called it a clock analogy, in that you can hit it from side control, north, south, half guard, any kind of position like that, as well as standing, right?
Mm-hmm. We say that knee bars are everywhere, and literally every position in jiu-jitsu, except for when I'm on your back, I've got it in one or two steps. So half guard is obvious. What I need to get a knee bar, I need to have one of my legs in between yours. That's what I need. If as long as I can get one of my legs in between yours, I've got a knee bar. I'll plug this later too, I'm sure, but our BJJ Fanatics video is all about how we counter back control with knee bars, especially if you're not familiar with what we're doing. People's back controls are obviously always evolving. So is our back control defense always evolving. So that's our whole thing. Like I can get it if you're on my back, I can get it quickly and easily at a dogfight, top or bottom. Like all of these things, I am within one or two steps. So yeah, he's got what he calls the clock position, which is everything where you rotate around the top of the body. So that would be knee on belly, side control, mount, north, south, all the rotations around, and exactly how he gets his leg in between yours from there. And when you're on top, you're right and ready to go for a knee bar. Most of these things, like especially our half guard stuff, looks the same bottom top. It's just whether or not I have to make space to get underneath you to be able to slide my leg through or get it over the top and around. It's literally everywhere except for when I've got your back. And when I've got your back, I've got your back. So I'm good there too.
One of the things that you guys mentioned is something that most of us know. It's called the pigeon pose, and you integrate it into your system in a way. The importance of the pigeon pose in this system.
So if you're going to do knee bars, you have to be good at defending the back. There's no two ways about it. I can't guarantee that you're not going to have better timing than me, especially if, you know, sometimes I will give my back if I feel like it's going because I feel like I can get ahead of you. But people will do the same thing to us. They'll give us the knee bar because they feel like they can get ahead of us and get into the back. It's about the hip line. If my hips are higher than your hips, I'm attacking knee bars. If your hips are higher than mine, you're attacking a rear naked choke. So it is so important to be able to defend the rear naked choke. And that is just a huge piece of defense. And then actually, when we were going back through it, we're huge fans of Prit Mikkelsen. He is just incredible with his stuff. And we realized how well that fits in a lot of what he does. And you even see him using it, but it's more transitionary. So I don't know that he's named it anything. We call it the pigeon because it's like the yoga pose.
Yeah. Can you describe it for the listeners?
Okay. So if you know yoga at all, like this is where you've got like your shin kind of perpendicular to your body and you're leaning over it. And that's like a hip stretch. Now in traditional yoga, you got your back leg straightened out behind you. What we do, it's kind of more like the half yoga where you kind of connected your back leg, the knee to your front foot. And then your back leg is kind of out behind you because it even comes into play with our knee bar attacks. That was where we named it first. That's what we're doing when we're looking for our toe holds out of the Drysdale position is we're moving into kind of a pigeon where your body has shifted straight forward now and you're kind of leaning over that front foot. And it's a very stable position. Think about trying to move somebody in that position. Like there's no way you're moving anybody. And your limbs are all pretty compact to your body, so you're not really exposing limbs there either. And so what the pigeon pose allows us to do is to be very stable while people are trying to pull us into different positions because you want to regain your chest to back control with me. You want to pull me over to the other side, but my base is stable and my arms and my legs are not exposed. So again, I can stay in pigeon for a really long time while I'm trying to find what you're looking for. Are you looking to try to underhook the arm? Are you looking to try to circle around and get on my back? I can kind of see these things and start to like take notes mentally so that I'm ready to either escape or to counterattack you at any point. Once you know what you're doing with that specific control, it doesn't matter if you have a body triangle on me. It doesn't matter. I can ward off that rear naked choke, except for against really elite guys. We'll still catch us there when that's their A game. But it's kind of like getting knee barred by Bendy. Of course, some people are going to do that to you.
When you're finishing your knee bar, one of the things I've noticed is that oftentimes, depending on where the heel is, sometimes it's on one side, sometimes it's kind of cross side. You guys do a little bit of a rotation, which is a little detail as well as sort of the extension type of thing. Is that correct? Can you give us the details of the finish?
Okay, so when I'm finishing the knee bar, again, I need to have control of your hip lines. And I come back to this because a lot of people want to focus on things like the head and the foot, but the real fight is with the hips. So I'm controlling both of your legs in one way or another. So whether it's with the Vinny lock or if I've got a post on your hand or if I've got a grip on your hand, I'm controlling both legs one way or another. I want to have my fulcrum as close to your knee line as I can safely do. And then we're moving up into the head where I really do want to pinch your toes between like my shoulder and my ear. Now, if I'm on the bottom side, I want it on the bottom side. If it's on the top side, I want it on the top side. And that's something that we've kind of added newer. I don't even know if that's on the Fanatics video or not, but we're learning that with the Vinny lock, when people go belly down, that's where they can start to fight this. And if I have it on the bottom side, I haven't stopped you from going belly down. So yeah, if anybody's putting you in Vinny locks, just see if you can go belly down and if that's how you can fight your way out. Again, it's a fight, but you can win it. But when we put it on the top side and pinch that down, now all of a sudden the belly down isn't an option anymore. So what I'm trying to do is to keep your knee in my center. Because if you can start to rotate the knee out one way or another, like I said, especially if you've got a little bend in the knee there, I don't have a knee bar. I don't even have a side knee bar. If you've got a little bend and your knee is going up or down, it doesn't matter which way you're turning it, I don't have it anymore. So that's kind of the last real piece of control is to pinch that. I like to hold on the heel. Some people like to put like a rear naked choke and grab their shoulder. But I actually do different things depending on what I'm feeling at any given point in time. But definitely heel. I like to go to the other heel. And then if I need to use that to pull your knee line back into place, I can do that because now I'm driving wherever your heel goes is where your knee is going to go. Like unless you have a broken shin. If I'm moving your heel, your knee is going to follow. And so that's more the rotation that we're doing. Sometimes when Bendy does this, it feels like a heel hook. He's also putting torque on the knee, especially when we like do the ones where we rock backwards and catch the knee and then we go over to the side. That one is so tight that when you put that pressure down with your head and you lift the heel up and pull it in to get it straight, it's a heel hook before it's a knee bar. It just doesn't look like one. He's doing both at the same time. And then the last part is it should be a very small movement at that point in time is just putting the hips forward. And it should really be less than an inch. If you've got everything locked in properly, it should be a very small movement. If you need a little bit more movement, then I have a trick where I kind of like hold onto your heels with both heels. I know you can't see it, but I'm like putting my hands together and hugging the heel. I've got my elbows into my chest, and now that gives me a whole other probably 12 inches that I can extend on the knee bar at that point in time. So I can finish like that. It works well, like if I've got somebody with really long legs and I can't control their foot with my head and control the hips at the same time, then I have to kind of go to these trickier movements where I can hold on. I do give up a little bit of control, but I will hold. And then when I'm ready to finish at the last second, I'll extend that heel out so that I can get a good torque on the leg.
Can you take me through order of operation, entry of a standard Drysdale? Can you give me the order of operations to the finish?
The first thing I want to do is control my position. That's our Jiu-Jitsu X video, is all about controlling this position. But this is our series of control positions. The Drysdale is one of the better controls, but you're kind of low on the legs. But that's where we always kind of land because I have good control. However I've entered, the first thing I want to do is, like all things in Jiu-Jitsu that I think people miss, you need to settle into your position, even if it's just for a millisecond. You need to settle that position. If you are kicking the leg over or stepping back or however you're getting there, you want to settle into that position just a second, and then you can start to look for where you want to go from there. So that's the first thing, is I want to settle this position. So getting that arm laced in, taking your legs away from you, and then I'm looking to unlock. So that's the next piece. So most people, when they get into this position, the first thing they're going to do is they know which leg is about to get attacked. They're covering. So the next thing I want to do to get the knee bar is that. But all the while, you may have people trying to pull on your arms and trying to shove your hips. If you're doing knee, they're pulling on your collar. They're doing all that sort of stuff. And so you can kind of start to unlock at the same time they're doing this with the Drysdale. I do it by just starting to walk my hands down the leg. Like I create a little bit of space in between the knee and I just start walking my hands down and wedge, and then I pop it off. And I do it all the time. You'll see me, I walk my hand down. And then again, I can put that motorcycle grip on that one more time, or I can pick my back leg up now and kick your feet apart, because your feet are not, you're not going to bridge on me anymore. There's nothing you've got there. So I can kind of let that back post for a second out while I kick your feet off. And then it depends. Am I looking for my Vinny lock? Which usually the answer is yes. So then I'm going to pull that leg in and pull it over the top of my knee. I want to shelf it on my knee to the finish. So my knee is out to control the position. It's in to finish the knee bar. And I'm going to put my knee over the top of the ankle pit. And then I basically am going to pick which way I fall. I like to fall to the top side. That's a better knee bar, where my body is over your leg, both of your legs. But sometimes the bottom side is the better option, or sometimes people will throw you over there so that they can catch your momentum and sit up and catch your head. So if I'm going to the top side, it's a lot less technical. I'm just going to triangle my legs and put the foot on the top side of my head, and I'm going to hyperextend your knee. I'm going to put my hips just a little bit forward. Then again, if it doesn't work, I've got that Vinny control there, right? Again, I can kick my leg off right back on top. If I go to the bottom side, I have to be mindful of the fact that you can sit up with me. So I kind of put like a stiff arm, like a Heisman out, just to stop your momentum from coming up. And once I've stopped that momentum, now again, it's a quick grip for me to get back over the heel and finish my knee bar. And once again, from there, I kind of put my back on the mat and just sit up on the bottom side. That's how we get back on top there. So that's kind of beginning to end from the Drysdale.
You have another series on YouTube, which I found very interesting. You have something called the Cradle Series. One of the videos you show is sort of an entry in a knee bar. You guys have some of the best free YouTube content out there that I've seen. It's just fantastic. Can you talk about what is this Cradle Series that you guys have?
The Cradle Series has a special place in my heart because that was when I stepped in. Initially, it was Bendy and Taylor that were doing it. Taylor is outstanding too. He's got his own gym here in Vegas now. We don't train as much as we would like to anymore, but that was kind of what happened. Was it was just the separation and we had to continue the content. Bendy wants it all out. Like, it's so funny how like a lot of people are like, let me hold on to my techniques and have my special technique for me. And it doesn't grow like that. It's really been an amazing experience to just like open it up and put it all out for the world, because when you're good at what you do, they can know you're going to do it and you're going to do it anyway. And when you know your system well, systems don't fail. Individual pieces of systems can fail, but systems, if they're done properly, don't fail. But yeah, the Cradle series was the first series. We all three did it together because we wanted it to be like a transition. So Taylor, having his background in wrestling that he has, was really good for putting a lot of the wrestling stuff on it. And the details that, again, going back to what we were saying, do I have decent wrestling for a grappler? Yeah. Am I somebody who knows how to wrestle really well? No. So Taylor was able to put that stuff on there, and that was our transition. And this is what it is with Bendy. Now we're like knee deep into the octopus guard, but he will find something that he is super passionate about, and he will study everyone and everything, and he will be like, where's our knee bar here? If we're putting it out there, we've tested it. And it's working on good people by the time we're putting it out there. Back to the Cradle series, though. I think he had gotten into that with Neil Melanson. I'm not sure how you say his last name. Gotten into it with the K-Guard with him. And I think that he kind of started looking at his Cradle and was like, oh, there are knee bars here. Because, you know, Neil does knee bars too. It's not like he doesn't. So he starts with like a little piece and he's like, okay, how do I build a whole system around this?
Can you give me an aha moment in your jiu-jitsu career?
Okay, so I can give like a physical moment. This is one I come back to a lot. I was rolling, I obviously don't remember who I was rolling with, but this is how brilliant Robert Drysdale is as an instructor. Live rolls, walking around, and I had gotten flattened out, and he's like, Katie, get off your back. And it was just like that moment where it just clicked for me, where I was like, oh yeah, if I just rotate my shoulder up a little bit, now I'm not so easy to control. And it totally like changed my bottom game forever. I feel like that is the point, because I trained for 7 years. I feel like that's where I went from white to blue, was in that moment, you know, was like, no, I'm not accepting this. I feel like I have aha moments all the time. You know, I feel like I never step on the mats without learning something. Listening to your podcast over the last week has been like, oh my gosh, Mike Dermillo, whoa. Like listening to him. Again, going back to Charles Harriet, anytime I can have a conversation with him, anytime, like when he and Natasha come through Vegas, like he adds something that I had never thought of, some concept, something that I'm able to take and run with right now. But my other aha moment was recognizing how my neurodiversity has affected how I learned jiu-jitsu. I have a thing called aphantasia. I have no sensory memory. I cannot picture my mother's face right now. I cannot remember what a blueberry smells like. I can't hear a song in my head. So when I'm learning jiu-jitsu, my mind works completely in words. Like everything that I watch when I'm doing it, I'm trying to be like, okay, the foot goes there, the arm goes there, this. And I've kind of refined it now where I'm like, okay, he was in half guard, he bridged like this, and then he found an arm bar. So that's about as far as I can get as far as words. And then when I go in and start repping, I either need a very patient advanced partner or like a good 2-stripe blue belt is ideal for me, because they're moving through the technique slow enough that I'm like, oh, that's right. He said I had to put my hand here. Oh, that's right. He said you had to shift your hips here. But mostly I'm like, okay, I do this and I'm like, okay, where's my arm bar? When I'm learning something that's outside of my movement patterns. So it was really eye-opening for me when I started to learn from Bendy, because jiu-jitsu was so overwhelming to me. As you can well imagine, I can't like remember what I just watched an instructor do, even if he did it 8 times. So learning from Bendy and learning his structural approach and finding the movement patterns over and over and over again, then I'm like, okay, I know where I am now and I can do that sort of stuff. And so understanding that my brain is doing very different things than everyone else's is. And I think we all are. So this is why I feel that this is applicable to most people. And so to understand like the way the teacher is teaching, to like really be able to grip on and be like, okay, this is how my brain works. And this is how I learned jiu-jitsu, was really eye-opening for me too, to understand, because I knew I had it, but I didn't realize how it was affecting my jiu-jitsu learning, if that makes any sense. Like I didn't realize that, like, because I'll do things and then I'll put like the wrong arm up and turn the wrong direction because all I remembered was the arm up in a turn. And so like a lot of times when I get outside of my movement patterns, people will be like, what belt does she have? Because all of a sudden I'm like, I'm looking like a 2-stripe blue belt. I don't have a problem with that. I love being humble. I love learning something new that's way outside of what I do. But I think figuring that out, that it was affecting how I was learning jiu-jitsu, has really allowed me to like refine the way that I learned jiu-jitsu, the way I process new information now is different. And I'm more intentional about finding my 2-stripe blue belt. Because if I'm working with like a good, like high level person and they don't know this about me, then they'll just flow through the thing just as quick as they learned it. And I'm like, I don't have an opportunity to feel and put words on what they're doing. So that's another aha moment for me, was like, oh, I learned jiu-jitsu very differently than everyone else does.
How would you describe both of your teaching styles?
It's pretty simple, actually. Bendy is very structural and I'm very conceptual. And if you go back to my neurodivergence, it makes sense. I roll better with concepts than trying to remember what I'm supposed to do and where things are supposed to go. But rather, if I can block a post, break your posture, and take the momentum, it doesn't matter what sweep I'm doing. I'm doing a sweep. For me, that's kind of how I look at jiu-jitsu all the time. And so a lot of times I'll be like, okay, what's happening here is this pressure, or what's happening here is this is working. And that's why, like, I'll take it straight from an armbar to a knee bar and be like, these are the same things. And this is why I need to have control over this. Like, your armbar is going to stink if the person's arm can lift up, or I'm comparing the dog bar to a low single. And why, if the butt can go back, like in a low single, that's why the dog bar didn't work. And because a low single isn't a knee bar. But you're hyperextending the leg, it's just not hyperextending to the point where it's an injury. You're just extending the leg. I guess you're not hyperextending it. So those are kind of the seasonings that I like to add in a lot. And Bendy is, this is how I was able to learn so well from him, is like, okay, we're going to work out of this position. The person may shrimp this direction. And if they do that, then you do this. And if the person does this, then if they do that, you do this. And so it's like the whole, he'll teach a little mini system in class, and not really like a chain of techniques. So the way that you see we are in our instructionals, that's kind of how we teach class too. It's not like, I'm going to do a takedown, a pass, and then I'm going to enter my knee bar or whatever else we're teaching on that day. It's always, if I'm doing this takedown, here are three options from this takedown. And sometimes if we're doing that, like we've been working a lot on octopus guard, so we're going to do like three options from octopus half guard in a class for that day. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to focus on the position. Like, what is my core position? What do I need to have a good octopus guard? Okay, I need pressure on the head. I need to make sure my legs are heavy. I need to make sure that they can't crossface me. I need to make sure all of these things are in place. And then we'll start looking at, okay, so the first movement I want to make may be a bump sweep. Now, is that going to work? Probably not. But what it is going to do is it's going to make him switch his weight. So now we're going to move into this. But let's just imagine for a moment that he's not going to base out and we're going to bump sweep. Okay, so now we're going to base out on the bump sweep, and now we're going to turn it back into the Shaolin sweep. And we can play back and forth with those two things. And then, you know, the third option may be, okay, now we're just going to escape. We're going to bump our hips up and we're going to pull our hips out. And so that's an exit. And then we'll move backwards and we'll be like, okay, if I'm in half guard, how am I getting to this position? How am I getting to this octopus guard? And then we'll kind of finish the class out with that, and usually some situational rollings of some type, like maintain your octopus guard, break his octopus guard, depending on what we do. Maybe we'll teach one technique and then we'll put the knee bar on it.
Well, I want to deep dive a little bit into the instructionals. The two that I know of is the Fanatics one. And personally, that's the one I'm most familiar with. I have it. I know a lot of people that have it too. And it's super popular. I personally think it's mandatory viewing for probably any instructor out there teaching knee bars, and students as well who have any sort of interest in the knee bar. You definitely should go get Bendy and Katie's knee bar instructional on BJJ Fanatics. And I'm not familiar with the one in Jiu-Jitsu X. I kind of touched on it. Can you go into it in terms of like, what can someone get out of it? What's included? How'd you guys organize this and think through this?
Our Jiu-Jitsu X was something that was becoming really important to us at that point in time when we were starting to see the limitations of our Drysdale position. And so we started moving into different control positions. And, you know, the pigeon pose was always kind of part of our control position. But, you know, to be able to move, you know, into a cross ashi from there, to be able to go to what we call our victor control, which you can imagine is kind of like what you end up with after you've done a victor roll. That was why we named it that. And just to be able to move up and down the body and maintain the control position, because if somebody sits up when you're low on their hips in the Drysdale, like, you've got nothing. I mean, in MMA, you've got a good back elbow, but you really do have to change your position at that point in time. And so I would say that video is for somebody who really wants to get in and learn our system, because I feel like if you want to take what we do, and this is fine, like, I appreciate everybody who takes a little piece of what we do and use it somewhere, then that is amazing. But if you really want to get in and do what we do with knee bars, like, I feel like that video is really important, because we only show one setup. I mean, it's just the basic knee cut setup for the knee bar. And then we go into, this is where I'm going to look for my calf slicer. this is where I'm going to, I think we did that one in there. That may have come later. But anyway, this is how I can find my knee bar out of a cross-ashi position. This is how I get back on top from said cross-ashi position. This is how I am going to find my knee bar out of this position, and how we can continually attack. The side saddle that we put in there is something that I found, and it's so important as a little person in the gym. I mean, Bendy is always the next biggest person in the gym for me, almost always. Other than that, I'm rolling with people that outweigh me by 40 to 100 pounds sometimes. And that Drysdale position is not going to work under those circumstances because I am too small of a surfer for that big of a wave. But when we started moving into the side saddle, I started figuring out how I can control a bigger body to start to even still look for my knee bars. Mostly on big bodies, I look for toe holds, and we do cover the toe hold too. But really being able to use that position and not just being like, oh, okay, it's not working, I'm done. But then we also go into our passing out of that, because it doesn't always work. And that's the point. It's like, you have to have a place where you enter the system, and you have to have a place where you're like, this guy is way too good at defending what I'm doing. Let's go ahead and move on and start looking for some chokes. Bindi did a competition one time, and I think he won by like 20 something points because the guy was not bound and determined not to get knee barred, but Bindi just kept passing. So when you pass, answer, you get points every time. And so it is equally as much a part of our system to be able to pass and to be able to exit and re-enter. And that's kind of where we get into that, is the loop. I didn't want to do that video. When Bendy brought that up to me, I was like, it's so boring. People aren't going to want to watch that. And then he made an excellent point. He's like, I am a person who watches instructional videos. I wish I had this video. I had to sit back and be like, you know what? He is so right. He is the target market for instructional videos. So if he wants to buy it, somebody else does. And you know, it's just the nature of the two platforms. BJJ Fanatics does a lot of advertising. You know, they put us on their YouTube channel. Jiu-Jitsu X, we're not one of their bigger name people. They put like, I think, one reel out that they collaborated with us on. We promoted it a little bit, and it just really didn't go much after that. But you know, BJJ Fanatics puts us on the daily deal, so people are like, hey, and they know that it's out there. Yeah, they're very different videos. I didn't want to do the same video twice. I was pretty adamant about that, and I feel like they both really add something.
If you can speak for Bendy as well, what do you wish you guys were better at individually?
Okay, so I'm in a space where I'm realizing that I got away with a lot of bullshit for a long time. And the more high level grapplers I'm rolling with right now, the more space I realize that I'm giving up. I had listened to some of your podcasts previously. Obviously, when Charles is on there, I will listen anytime Charles is talking. But listening to Mike when he was talking about the dead limbs, and it was like a light bulb moment for me, another light bulb moment for me. And I didn't have the words to put on it prior to that, but too much dead limbs, too much just flailing an arm and and most of the time getting out of side control because I had done this gigantic movement with my arm. But listening to him, I realized it was dead. So I'm using him because he finally put the words on what it is that I want to get better at. For Bendy, oh my gosh, he is constantly on a new thing. So, you know, right now, I mean, obviously octopus guard right now is what he's trying to get better at. But I think that, you know, it's positional. It's getting better at positions. It's moving between the riding and the flowing and the pinning and staying on those positions. So I would say that's been a big part of what he's been working on recently too. And then, you know, I would love to get better at, how do you say this, is getting as an older grapplers, we need to be more mindful about doing our weight training, doing the things that are keeping your body in good shape. So if anything, we were talking about that today, is like the thing that we would really like to get better is making that a priority, both of us making it a priority to get into the gym and do the weight bearing exercises that are going to keep our bones healthy so that we can keep doing this.
Can you tell me a time, like something special you've seen, when you've witnessed something special from a student?
Man, today in class, we only teach 3 days a week. There are three instructors at our gym and we only teach 3 days a week. And there's this young man who I remember him on his first day. He was athletic, but jiu-jitsu was not something that was clicking for him. He kept showing up. Today, I was watching him roll, and I've been seeing this over time. He's a blue belt now, but watching him today on another really good blue belt and competitive blue belt, getting to his positions that we've taught him, and then the transitions, it was like watching the whole system at play. against somebody who's really good at it, who gives Bendy trouble with the system. So he's giving Trevor the same trouble with the system and watching Trevor just flow through it seamlessly. And it's funny because the other instructors call him Kneebar Trevor. Like that's what they call him, is because he has so taken on to it. And, you know, I would say that today that was just, it was a real moment for me to be like, he has taken all of it and is using it and doing well with it. Because most of what I see is somebody taking a little piece here or a little piece there, and they tag us in it when they, but to watch somebody take all of it and then be successful with it was just like, I don't know. So that was a moment today that is like fresh in my mind, but it was just like, yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and Bendy?
My journey into martial arts, I suppose, started when I was probably 13 years old. We were on vacation with the family in hotel rooms. And so I'm 46, so this is like way back when I was 13. They did not have DirecTV in hotel rooms. You were kind of watching what was there. And there was a documentary on women boxers. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is so cool. But I grew up in a town that had like 400 people in it. So there was no boxing gyms there. There was no jiu-jitsu schools there. So I was your typical three-sport athlete, volleyball, basketball, softball, just doing everything that I could. But it never really left me. I loved it. So when I went off to school, I went to school in San Luis Obispo, and I got a job at a doctor's office, which was basically right across the street from Chuck Liddell's gym. So I went in and started doing kickboxing in there. I wanted to fight. I knew I wanted to fight. That was not a question for me. So I moved out to Chicago, and that was where I actually started fighting. That was where I had my first fight, training kickboxing there. And the grappling, I got really hurt. I guess I can back up a little bit. At Chuck Liddell's gym, I had taken a jiu-jitsu class, a grappling class there. Obviously, it's all no-gi. And during the partner switch in live rules, got paired with a brand new white belt who was much larger than me. And he wanted to put my knee on my forehead. And I tore my hamstring so bad. It kind of turned me off a lot. Not that I didn't love the idea of it, but it was just like, I have to like work. I have to do things. I can't have torn hamstrings. So I really didn't come back to that actually until I moved from Chicago to Las Vegas. And I moved here because, again, things weren't really happening in Chicago with fighting, and I wanted to fight. And so I moved to Vegas because I was like, they're going to have fights in Las Vegas. And so I signed up to what was at that point, what was it called then? It was the Throwdown Gym, which quickly became Tap Out. And then that was where I met Bendy. Sean Tompkins had come over from Extreme Couture and brought a bunch of his team with him. And Bendy had actually kind of just come to the States. He was living in a house full of French guys, and it was really funny. I was teaching yoga. I was covering the yoga class for the yoga instructor. Bendy came in to take yoga, and I thought nobody was going to come take the class because fight team training was around the same time, and I was like, okay, I'll do it if anybody shows up, and nobody had come that day. So I was going to have my coach all to myself. I was going to get all the mitts, all the attention, and Bendy walks up and says, I want to take yoga, and I'm like, ugh. Okay. But his spirit, and if you've ever, you know, he doesn't talk a lot on this. This is why I'm doing most of this anyway. But his spirit is so sweet and so gentle and so generous. Like, I couldn't be mad at him for very long. So he took my yoga class, and I couldn't find kickboxing fights again, though, even in Vegas. Like, it just wasn't happening. So I started looking more into doing MMA, and obviously, then it's not an option. You have to learn how to grapple. Like, I know this. So I'd been his partner in wrestling class, and this was when he really caught my attention, because in wrestling, you know the culture. I didn't really even know the culture at that time. I thought they were beating me up because they didn't want me there, but it's just the wrestling culture. Or they were treating me like I was going to break. Either way, I wasn't very happy about it. But when I got Bendy, he had more of that jiu-jitsu attitude of just treating me like a smaller, less experienced partner. And I just loved it. I was like, this guy is amazing. He is so patient and so good at letting me work and then not letting me work too much. And then after that, he had asked me to roll with him some other date when we were in the gym. And I was like, oh, my jiu-jitsu is terrible. I don't have anything to offer you. And he was like, well, do you want to spar? And I was like I said, I can stand with anybody. Let's go. And so we trained a little bit. He showed me some half guard stuff after we got done training. And then we sat on the mats and just talked for like probably 2 hours after that, which if you knew how bad his English was at that point in time, it was like, I don't even know how we did that, but we did. And then this is, I got to throw this story in. This is one of my favorite stories. Kevin Randleman was training at the gym at the time. I love Kevin. He was just the most amazing, loving, generous, like, I don't know. He lit up the room when he walked in. So he comes up to me while I'm talking to Bendy and he gives me a hug and a kiss on the cheek. And I'm thinking like, oh, look, I'm so cool. Kevin Randleman knows me. He likes me this much. And of course, Bendy thought we were dating. That's a good like stiff arm to somebody to think that you're dating the monster. But then he asked me a minute later if I had a boyfriend. And so it was really like this weird conversation. And our relationship really developed over training, not even so much through conversation. We had Google Translate out all the time trying to communicate. We just absolutely fell in love. He was in my corner for my first MMA fight. Like he was there through my whole MMA career. He's been there with me.
We should probably state that Bendy is French, correct?
Yes. Barely had any English when he came to America. But in that time in France, there were no black belts in jiu-jitsu. His first coach was a blue belt. And he was a black belt in judo, but he was a blue belt. So a lot of his ideas about jiu-jitsu come from a very collaborative place over master-student place. So I think that that's had a huge influence on my way I look at teaching and learning, and you still see this today. He's very much in with his students, very much learning from them at the same time he's teaching them, and will point something out good that they did that he forgot to point out. So I think that a lot of that comes from that. And then little by little, they had more black belts that would come over, or some guy'd go to Brazil and he'd train and he'd come back. And so like he was right at the very beginning of basically European jiu-jitsu and came up as, you know, one of the premier grapplers. But the way the knee bar comes into this story is that he was destroying this guy in a grappling match and the guy rolled for a knee bar and beat him. And he was like, oh, there's something here. That kind of began his obsession with the knee bar. Prior to that, he was a guillotine guy. And then with MMA being illegal in France, he was always the away team, always fighting on short notice. They really didn't have like a core group. It wasn't cool. He built up quite a reputation as an MMA fighter there. He won the Shudo in Europe. He won some M1 fights. He beat a guy in Russia with Fedor in the other guy's corner. So funny story. He says that when you fight in Russia in the old days, like they didn't give you anywhere to warm up. This was how you warmed up. Blow your hands, rub them together, get in the cage, get in the ring. He had been signed by the WEC. There was a guy over here, his name is Ferry Keeter. He was an Olympic judoka. He was running kind of a house of French fighters where he'd bring him over and give him an experience in Vegas to train, hook him up with fights if he could, and managers, and he hooked Bendy up with a manager. Anyway, he got into the WEC. We ended up getting married in 2011 and still training, fighting, doing everything we could. We moved into Robert Drysdale's gym, which is where he got his black belt. And I didn't ever belt up there because I only did no gi, and rules are rules. I respect it. But I trained for 7 years, and it wasn't until I moved over to 10th Planet that I got promoted at all because I was just doing MMA. And so that's what I was saying when we were talking earlier about how like belts have a strange meaning to me. There's no way I was still a white belt after 7 years, even if I was only training 2 days a week. But yet that was what it was.
Bendy is now a coach at 10th Planet downtown Las Vegas, correct?
Yes. We didn't leave Drysdale's on any kind of negative terms. My schedule changed at work, and we had met Casey when he first opened 10th Planet. And I don't know if you've ever heard anything or met Casey Halstead, but he is just quite possibly the most charismatic human being I've ever met in my entire life. Like, you just feel so good in his presence. He loves jiu-jitsu. So when my schedule changed and I was like, I can only train one day a week at Drysdale's now, I'm like, I cannot pay a membership for one day a week. It's just not worth it. And I'm not getting enough of what I need. So I asked Bendy, I was like, what do you think if I went down to 10th Planet? And he was like, I think it's a great idea. When he opened his new gym, he gave Bendy an opportunity to start teaching. And we're no-gi people. Everybody knows we're no-gi people. We were all, you know, we're MMA people. And so when we left, it was very smooth, slid right into the position. And we still have great relationships with Drysdale. We still have a great relationship with a lot of people over there. A lot of Vegas has been through there at one point or another. And so, you know, it's a really cool network that we developed.
Yeah, what a town to be in.
you can just wander over and take it to class from David Avalon or Vinny Magalesh or, you know, like it's just, it's crazy. So yeah, that was how we ended up over at 10th Planet. I was there for, I don't know, maybe a month when Casey was like, this is a little bit ridiculous at this point, but here's your blue belt. We have to go through the steps. And for me, in some ways, I was like, I'm in the system now. Like, it was always nice to just be like, oh, I don't have a belt. I'm a white belt. I do MMA. And everybody's like, okay, I'll put you where I put you then. But then when you've got a blue belt now, it just felt weird to me to be there.
Katie, can you tell us more about your social media?
We are on Instagram. That's probably our main platform. I feel like the jiu-jitsu community kind of likes to live on Instagram.
They do, right?
yeah, it's kind of, somebody else pointed that out to me and I was like, wow, that is so true. So we do a lot of our stuff on Instagram. I put most of our stuff on TikTok as well, because I mean, hey, it's done, why not? And I've been doing more with YouTube shorts on the same thing. But our Instagram is set up kind of like an instructional. So that's why you'll see when we first put out one video, like it'll have like 40 to 100,000 views on it. And then the longer the series goes, it starts dwindling down to like 3,000 views because it doesn't have the novelty that the Instagram audience likes. But I feel like that's where we really dig in and give to people who are actually trying to learn from us. We had a lot of dumb luck there. I didn't know what reels were, but I knew I could put music behind our videos if I used them. And that was when Instagram was really pushing reels. So it ended up being a very good thing. Even if you don't like knee bars, you can still learn a lot from our Instagram because we are doing a lot of sweeps to our knee bars. We're doing a lot of takedowns to our knee bars. So there's plenty to learn from what we're doing there. But if I see that you really want to learn something and you're like, hey, I'm having trouble with this, I'll go in the garage and shoot a video and send it over to you to help you understand stuff because like we just love sharing that. We love what we do so much. We're like, here, have some. Do it. Bring it back to us. If you're like, hey, what's a good video that you guys got a lot out of, you know, also scouring YouTube. And we're happy to point you to the person who's got a really great YouTube videos series on something too. I mean, it's such a beautiful time in jiu-jitsu where there's so much available. Some people like, I don't have the patience to process it, but Bendy really does. But you know, I learn a lot from watching Instagram. For me personally, that's how I do learn. I learn from people's videos on Instagram. So we're not shy about sharing our platform with anybody. You know, you come through Vegas, you want to film a series that involves knee bars, come on in. Like, we're happy to collaborate and put as much out as we can with everybody else. But it's been amazing for the amount of connections that we've been able to make all over the place. If I can just throw this in too, I had a coworker, he's a black belt, and he said that he was putting out some videos and he was like, oh, but I don't want to deal with the haters. I don't want to deal with, and I think that it is such a powerful thing to just take your jiu-jitsu and put it out in the world, even if it's not that good yet, to just take it out there and be like, this is how I'm practicing. This is what I'm working on. And to watch your own progression. There's stuff that we used to teach that I'm like, what did we do there? Why was that working? And it's not working for me now. And I don't even know that had we been filming at that point in time, I would know. So I really encourage everybody to get in and start recording your stuff and put it out in the world. You'll be amazed what comes back to you, who comes back to you, how you can grow. If I see something that I like that you're on there, I'm following you now. I'm excited to learn from you. And that's from the King Kneebar account. King Kneebar, we've put it across the board, King Kneebar. You can follow me or Bendy if you want to see my food. Occasionally I'll put some competition stuff of myself up that I wouldn't put on, you know, because we keep it so structured on there, or likewise on Bendy's page. So he's just Bendy Casimir on Instagram, and I am the Casimir Project. But if you put in Katie Casimir, I think there's two of us, but you should figure out which one's me pretty quickly because it's not private. So you can see my food. I'm always happy to connect with people.
Well, everyone, thanks so much for watching. I am your host, Adolfo Fronda. Please, you know, do the whole thing. Subscribe, thumbs up, and join our VIP, you know, membership thing. We get longer early episodes and all kinds of good stuff. It's $1 a month. $1. Come on, people. Katie, thank you so much. This was awesome. We love your content and really, really appreciate your time. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you. I always love an opportunity to talk about jiu-jitsu. So as long as you talk, I'll talk.
All right. Thank you, everyone. See you guys next time.